benefit themselves at our expense. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's a disgrace that Obama is fronting and even lying for these self-serving, kleptocratic corporate powers.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Listen to Say Hey, Chico's only locally produced sports talk radio program. My name is Jake, joined as always by Noobs. Noobs, how you doing?
I'm doing great, man.
Very good. You have a good weekend?
I had a great weekend. I had a good day today. It was fantastic outside.
Glad to hear that.
Yeah, I took the little doggy for an extended walk.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Perfect. I had a sporting weekend myself.
Excellent.
Went to the Cal game on Saturday night.
Nice.
Went to the Raider game yesterday with my uncle.
Oh, cool.
It was a good weekend. Yeah, it was exhausting, but I got home about 1 a.m. last night, made last call at Duffy's.
Attaboy.
Spectacular.
Nice.
Yes. So let's get right into it. We got plenty to talk about. I feel like I should at least give a little recap of the Cal game.
Mm-hmm.
And that was seeing Jared Goff throw for about 500 yards, six touchdowns. Beat Oregon State, who stinks, but... fun game to be at, a little slow. So many first downs and so much scoring that it wound up being like a four-hour game.
Yeah.
So it was late. It was a 7:30 start, and we did the kind of rare thing for our family, and we actually took off a little early, which we almost never do, but we're not diehard Cal fans, so we felt permissible. We still got home past midnight as it was. But definitely fun to be out there. Hadn't been to a Cal football game in a long time.
Nice.
And the Cal basketball program got rolling over the last week, too, with a big 30-point win. Starting up their very very exciting 2015-16 campaign with two big-time national recruits.
I was going to say, they had like a top-five recruiting class this year, didn't they?
They do. They do. Nice. Yeah, they had the local coming out of O'Dowd, and then they had his buddy, Rab's buddy, coming from across the country from, I think, from Georgia. Basically a recruiting coup there. Friend of the top five brings in another, you know, they're going to be good.
Right.
It's exciting. They haven't been this potentially good in a real long time. So
that's good for them to be able to get a kid from the Southeast, because usually, you know, the Kentucky, Dukes, North Carolinas of the world swoop those kids.
Exactly. And it might only be for a year, the way
right.
college players go
the
these days.
The one and done.
The one and done.
But it would be cool to see, you know, it's cool to see Cal make a deep run in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, that would be great. I mean, I can't.
It's been a while.
When was the last time they even made the Sweet 16? I couldn't, off the top of my head.
I want to say a couple of years ago they at least got to round two.
Did they? Yeah, I feel like they won a game.
I know they won a game.
Yeah. But they haven't been a threat in a long while.
Probably since Jason Kidd.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe Abdur-Rahim briefly. But anyway, you know what? We got plenty to talk about. Let's start with a little. I got the Sportsman of the Year nominees in front of me. And even though Sports Illustrated is a magazine, you know, paper is what it is, it's still a good list. It's a good way to recap the year, and later they'll put it out. Last year it was Madison Bumgarner for his postseason heroics. So let's go down the list and talk about who we think might be deserving. I think the potential winners are definitely on this list. We'll go down. First, we got Simone Biles. She's an 18-year-old gymnast. That's going to be a tough one to win Sportsman of the Year. Gymnastics just doesn't have that kind of pull nationally.
Right.
Usain Bolt, great at the Beijing World Championships. But again, track, tough to win Sportsman of the Year. Steph Curry.
In a non-Olympic year.
Yeah. Steph Curry, who was the MVP. We've seen guys like LeBron James get it before. You know, Michael Jordan's of the world, Kobe's. Then we got Thomas Davis. Every down linebacker for the Panthers, probably not going to get it. Novak Djokovic, fabulous.
Yeah.
Tennis world.
I think he won three out of the four majors this year.
Mm-hmm. He's kind of unsung a bit, even though he's very dominant.
Right.
I would say.
I mean, when it's all said and done, he might have more majors than Federer.
You never know.
You know?
I saw him in a watch commercial recently. Huh. He doesn't do a lot of that.
No.
He pulled it off.
Yeah, no, it's funny. It's like he, you know, I don't know what it is about the Eastern Europeans, but they don't get a lot of...
No.
A lot of play.
Well, not a lot of Western press.
Not really.
It's just not really the way it goes.
And it's not fair because he's definitely the most dominant player in the game right now.
Without question. Then we got Carly Lloyd, who is a World Cup hero.
Mm-hmm.
She did some of the more amazing things you'll ever see on a big stage on the soccer field. I would say that she's definitely a fan favorite for such an award.
Right.
With the way that all went down.
Totally.
We got Lionel Messi. Barcelona, Spanish League, Copa del Rey, titles. Probably not going to win it. Then we got American Pharoah, the horse. Sometimes you'll get these big stud horses on a list of people. I appreciate the fact that this horse won the Triple Crown.
Right.
I don't know if it should be in a category of human awards.
Right.
Does that make sense?
No, absolutely. I mean, you could put Jeff Gordon's race car up there, I guess.
You could. You could.
I mean, maybe that's not a fair comparison because someone's got to drive it. But, you know, if he hadn't, I mean, it takes something like winning the Triple Crown to even sniff this list.
Right.
And, you know, we hadn't had a Triple Crown winner since, what, 77?
Yeah.
So it was kind of a big deal, but it's definitely a sport in America that's kind of, you know, fallen by the wayside.
At least,
I mean, it doesn't get a lot of press
not
anymore.
Not in terms of press, aside from the biggest races.
Right.
Although people still do go to the track. If you ever go to Golden Gate Field, for example, on the weekend, there are people there.
Absolutely.
But media-wise, not what it once was, right, aside from the big matches.
Totally. It's kind of like boxing.
Mm-hmm, a little bit. Speaking of fighting, Ronda Rousey is on this list.
Oh, man. Did you see the knockout?
I saw the replays of it. Now, man. Ronda Rousey could be a legitimate contender for this award.
Yeah.
John knows, and John is similar to me, we're not big UFC fans.
No.
It's not our thing. It's a little too brutal for my taste personally.
Yeah.
But I do really admire the fact that a woman like Ronda Rousey can be one of the most famous athletes in the world. And within that sport, she makes the women's side of it bigger than the men's. When she got beat this weekend, I mean, that was the most... I think the biggest draw they'd had of all time for a UFC match.
80,000 people, I think, in Australia that came out for this.
And that was the headliner. So yeah. I think that's really cool that she has that power.
I think it's great. And I've heard a lot of people say, oh, it's bad for the sport that she got knocked out. And I don't see...
I disagree completely.
I disagree too, because you want to see her now either, you know, get back up, so to speak, metaphorically, and either take on this woman again.
Home.
And, you know, and win. Or, you know, because to me it's like... You stay on top for so long, it kind of gets a little boring.
Mm-hmm.
So this is kind of throwing an interesting wrench into the whole thing. But
rivalries are made. You lose.
You lose.
Yeah. I mean, everybody loses except for Rocky Marciano and Floyd Mayweather.
Right. This whole idea that, like, when they're talking about the Yankees-Red Sox rivalry, it was never a rivalry until 2004.
No.
It was as much of a rivalry as a hammer is to a nail.
Right, right. Just because two teams don't like each other or two individuals doesn't really make it necessarily a competitive rivalry.
No.
Just
the other side has to win a couple times.
Yeah, exactly. I agree completely. So I think Ronda Rousey is definitely a legit candidate. Although suffering that loss right at the
end
of the
year
might hurt her chances for such an award. Then we have the entire Kansas City Royals team.
Mm.
It's hard to give an award to a team when you're looking at individual statistics, so I don't know if that really counts. And then we have Jordan Spieth, who is the superstar young golfer, the youngest ever to win the Masters, the second youngest, pardon me, and then the youngest to win the U.S. Open. He is the world number one ranking after a strong finish at the HSBC Champions event in China. That's a contender right there. You brought up Jason Day, though, and how he had near as good a year. Just, you know, he's not the same caliber of youthful sensation, per se.
He's not, but I'm not sure why he shouldn't be. I couldn't. I mean, I obviously have no vote in this, but I couldn't give it to Spieth because I think if you're going to have a golfer be that, he's got to have had like a head and shoulders above everyone else year,
mm-hmm,
relatively speaking, to the other golfers, and I just don't think he's done that.
Well, I mean,
he had a phenomenal year, don't get me wrong.
And considering his age, I think you really have to kind of look at it with kind of wide eyes, you know what I mean?
For sure.
Day is 7 or 8 years older than he. But I don't think he's the athlete of the year either. I think the final one, I go with Serena Williams because of what she's doing at her age in a sport that is dominated by youth,
mm-hmm,
on both sides, men's and women's.
Used to be. I don't know if that's
maybe not quite as much.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, Djokovic is definitely, you know, you still have Federer's competing and so forth.
Right.
But even more so in the women's game over the years, you're seeing, you know, 16-year-old champions, 17-year-old champions.
That's the way it was. I mean, like, yeah. Jennifer Capriati, when she came out, she was like 13,
Hingis.
You know. Martina Hingis, Sharapova, all these women come out when they were teenagers. And so what Serena's doing is just unbelievable.
Yep.
I mean, she's like, what, 36, 37
or something? Yeah, late 30s, two matches short of completing the calendar Grand Slam.
And she's clearly the best player.
Uh-huh.
I mean, Panetta, was it? I can't even remember the Italian. There was an all-Italian final in the U.S.
Yep.
But, I mean, 99 times out of 100, Serena beats that woman.
Yep.
I mean, literally, 99 out of 100.
It was one of those days.
It's just one of those days.
You don't take anything away from the competitor that won, but, you know, Serena's the top dog.
Yeah.
And I would probably give my vote to Serena Williams this year for Sportsman of the Year.
Let me ask you this. Is there anything – is this just based on what you do on the court or on the field or on the ice? Or is this – actually, I don't think I heard a hockey player on that list. But,
right.
Or is there any, like, philanthropic endeavors that are considered here? Is what you do with inside the community, does that mean anything?
Because
that's what I think of when I think of Sportsman of the Year.
Right. I think there are typically separate awards given, maybe not by Sports Illustrated, but I know they, within most sports, they kind of have the, you know, the Roberto Clemente Award, things like that. I don't think
McCutcheon won this year.
Right, yeah. I don't think they're normally factored into the statistical / you know, dominance factor as much.
Okay.
Why did you have a nominee that would go with that?
No, I just was curious as to whether or not some of these names were on there because of that, or if they were all on there because of that, or if it was just basically, you know, who was the most dominant athlete.
I think this list is who was the most dominant. Of those, or maybe somebody that you didn't see on there, who would you vote for 2015 Sportsman of the Year?
Greg Hardy.
Oh, of course.
Just kidding.
Yeah.
Just kidding, people.
Speaking of that, we do have our Greg Hardy fundraiser going right now. We're a week in. We got about $500. So that's a good start for
the
first
week.
That's a good start. Yeah. It's going to go all the way to the Super Bowl. So we have a long kind of campaign to go with it. If you don't have the money this week, maybe next week, maybe the week after that. But like we said, we are still running with the Screw Greg Hardy campaign. And we want to get to $5,000 by the end of the beginning of February. The Super Bowl is on February the 7th.
Yeah,
so
that's totally doable. I mean, we still have 7 or 8 weeks of the regular 7 weeks of the regular season, 3-4 weeks in the playoffs with the off week in the Super Bowl. So if we can get 500 a week, then we'll get there.
Yeah,
and that would be great for that'd be just great for Catalyst, and you know, it'll make people feel good too about what they're doing, what they're using to spend their money on, you know, during the holiday season.
Right. So in your real pick for Sportsman of the Year, who might you go with?
I would maybe say Serena, just because, like, what we just discussed as far as, like, her being so dominant at this point in her career, where I think a lot of people thought they keep just waiting for it to be over.
Right.
You know what I mean? And, you know, Kansas City, I mean, great story. I think this is kind of a nod to what they've done over the last 2 years.
Right.
To be honest with you. You know, but I don't like the idea of giving it to a team.
Yeah.
Necessarily.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's a tough list.
Yeah.
I think I'd have to, like, mull it over.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a tough list, but definitely lots of deserving candidates. And then moving on from the first topic there, you're listening to Say Hey, by the way, here on 90.1 KZFR. Let's talk a little college football, because another week in the books. We're getting closer to playoff time.
Yeah.
What were your takeaways from the weekend?
Well, I mean, a couple of teams getting knocked out of the hunt.
Stanford for one.
You know, Stanford, that loss against Oregon at home was really tough, not just on them, but for the Pac-12's chances in general. Utah went down in overtime to Arizona.
Right.
So there will not be a one-loss Pac-12 team.
Nope.
Which is really going to hurt them. They would need so many chips to fall their way for them to even squeak in a Stanford, you know, at 10-2 or 11-2.
How many one-loss teams are still left?
By my count, there's like 11.
Mm-hmm.
That's including the undefeated teams.
Right.
Right. The big game this weekend, obviously, is going to be Ohio State, Michigan State.
Yep.
Michigan State still actually has a chance, because if they beat the Buckeyes this weekend in Ohio, if they are able to pull that upset and then go on and win the Big Ten championship, then they'd be sitting there at 12-1. It would be really hard. I think basically what you have now is you're going to have one representative from the ACC, SEC, Big 12, and Big 10, respectively. Mm-hmm. I don't see any of these conferences getting two teams in.
Okay.
But then you also have Notre Dame is kind of that outlier. You know, that end of the year game at Stanford was looming like a huge game. Now, not so much. But then again, the pressure is going to be off of Stanford somewhat.
Yeah, I think the pressure is still on Notre Dame.
Clearly.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Notre Dame, with their only loss being like by 2 points at Clemson earlier in the year, that's a pretty, because, you know, a lot of times they look at like, well, who did you lose to and how did you lose? When did you lose and how much did you lose by? And so a 2 point loss to the number one undefeated team looks pretty good.
Right.
That being said, I think right now on a neutral field, I think Alabama is the best team.
Okay.
Now, I could be a little bit of a homer on that, but at the same time, I mean, the way that they, you know, dismantled Mississippi State a week after dismantling LSU. I just feel like with the competition that they're, you know, doing every week, and granted they got Charleston Southern this weekend, you know, which is kind of inexcusable to me to schedule a team that late in the season.
Yeah.
You know,
that's a week one game.
You know, it is. It's, you know, but I guess they're having a late homecoming and it's the week before Auburn, and they usually try and not have something crazy tough the week before Auburn. Because even though the Tigers might be down a little bit, War Eagle is going to be super pumped for that game.
Right.
Because, they would love nothing more than to knock Alabama out of the national championship race.
Right. That's true. That's very true.
Real quick, looking at the Big 12, though, Oklahoma beat Baylor, and Oklahoma State escaped a scare against Iowa State. So we could have that last game of the season, Oklahoma versus Oklahoma State, as the Big 12 winner.
Right. I'm looking forward to another tough matchup for Ohio State coming the week after. We got Michigan.
Yeah.
So that's the first big Jim Harbaugh rivalry game,
yes,
which is going to be exciting. And Michigan, two losses, right?
Two losses. Yeah. One to Utah.
And one on
the freak punt block against Michigan State. I mean, literally, we could be talking about the Wolverines vying for a national championship.
Yep.
And technically, they can still win the Big Ten because they still control their own destiny, actually, in that division.
Right.
Right. And so I believe they do. If Ohio State beats Michigan State and then Michigan beats Ohio State, they will win that division, and then they will go to face more than likely Iowa.
Okay.
Who still remains undefeated.
Right. But that's going to be that's back-to-back weeks for Ohio State. That's what you like to see at the end of the season.
Absolutely.
With the top teams playing other top teams.
Totally. And that's the way the Big 12 did it this year. They backloaded their schedule where TCU, Baylor, Oklahoma State, and Oklahoma are all playing each other in the last 3 weeks of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if they could have just like known ahead of time that those are going to be the top four teams, you know, because every year or two, you know, Texas will be in there or whatever. But I guess, you know, I don't know if that was done on purpose or what, but we're going to see it all shake out. And Ohio State's got its work cut out for it.
Yeah.
And don't sleep on North Carolina. That's like my dark horse long shot pick, because they've only got one loss right now, and they will get a chance to play Clemson in the ACC championship. If the Tar Heels win that game, I mean, because nobody was thinking about North Carolina being in the college football playoff.
Nobody thinks about that ever.
No.
I mean, this.
I don't even think anybody still has that on their radar, except for maybe the kids in North Carolina.
I wasn't thinking about it.
Yeah. But no, they're still alive to go to the playoff.
Wow.
Yeah.
That'd be a trip.
That would be a trip.
Yeah. And you know, Duke would, do they still just have the one? How many losses does Duke have?
They lost again.
They lost
North again. Carolina smoked them.
Oh, okay. That's who got them. Yeah, I was thinking of that Miami game. But, we're coming down to it. What date is the national championship set for? Is that post-New Year's?
The semifinals are on New Year's Eve.
Right.
And then I think 10 days later on the Monday following the first weekend of wild card playoffs in NFL.
Right.
So it's like Monday the 10th or something.
Right. I guess that's better than, because wasn't it for a while, or
the
11th, for a long time?
January 11th.
They would take like almost a full month off. You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
The game would be so far out past everything else that had happened that it was like, it was kind of weird.
Well, because usually, you know, back in the day, you know, the national championship would be on, like, there was no national championship. It was basically like, because of rankings, you might have like, you know, one versus three, and then two plays like number six,
right,
based on who's going to a bowl, because your conferences were all tied into a bowl, you know, the Pac-10, Pac-8, and then the Pac-10, now the Pac-12, they would always play in the Rose Bowl against the Big Ten winner.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, you'd know how it all would shake out on January 1st.
Right.
There was never a bowl game after January 1st.
Right.
So, but all the regular season would end. This is before conference championships.
Mm-hmm.
So the regular season was always over around Thanksgiving.
Right.
So yeah, you'd have like 5 weeks sometimes in between the bowl game
right.
for the champions. And it's just too long.
Right.
I actually think we should maybe expand it to eight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and have every conference champion, no matter what, even if you got three losses, because let's make it a little bit more like basketball where you have these like long shot Cinderella, you know. And granted, I understand that every week, that's what makes college football so important, is that because, you know, you don't have all these second chances. But I mean, if we throw it out to four more teams, maybe even like throw in the Houstons of the world, like let's say Houston's 13-0.
Yeah.
Why not give them a shot?
Right.
You know, like the Butlers in college basketball.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'd love to see eight teams.
Why not?
It took them so long to get to four. I'm not sure when that's going to happen, but I mean, it would be cool.
I think it'd be cool too, especially if, you know, something shakes down this year where like a few teams are getting snubbed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, let's say we've got 2-1 loss Big Ten teams, and then Notre Dame's in there and Clemson's in there maybe with a loss. Like, you know.
And you know the funny thing about that is about them not doing a bigger playoff? And we're not talking about like 16 or anything.
Because you know they want the money.
You know they want the money, and yet they don't. It seems like
right.
it just seems like a slam dunk, you know. Like, I know there's money wrapped up in other things, and the way bowl games work is
right.
kind of bizarre.
And there's this, all these traditions that they're still trying to grasp onto,
which, you know, in some ways is cool, but they've already degraded them so much that they're not really traditions anymore.
Well, you got 40 bowl games.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, if you want to have the playoff system, say for eight teams, you can still give the name of individual playoff games, you know, whatever bowl.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll still technically be played, because at this point, most of them don't mean that much anyway, aside from a couple of the, you know, old granddaddies.
Right.
They're really not that, you know, no one's winning the Holiday Bowl doesn't mean anything anymore, or the Peach Bowl or whatever else. They're all just kind of sponsored events and no one cares.
Right. And you're right though about the, as far as the sponsorship goes, because like the semifinals this year is like the Cotton Bowl and like the Rose Bowl, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even remember, but it's like you know, it's gonna rotate between, you know, like you said, the old granddaddies, Fiesta, Orange, Sugar, Cotton got back in there, and the Rose. So, you know, it's like you can still hold on to your sponsorships. Let's make it eight, but let's make it like automatic bids.
Mm-hmm.
Because this whole idea of like, oh, well, now we've got this, you know, because before it was like up to the writers and the coaches, you know, with the polls. Now we've got this like group of 12 people who are sequestered in some hotel conference room
mm-hmm.
in Texas. And so it's not any better. It's still coming down to a small amount of people that are picking and choosing teams.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've got this show that's happening like 7 weeks too early. And everybody's getting all up in arms about, oh, this conference is getting jobbed and these guys aren't. You know what I mean? And it's mm-hmm. just like all this speculation is just fueling, you know, to me, it's like, let's just make it a concrete thing. You know, like let's get either, you know, more teams in these conferences, you know what I mean? So we have 16 teams and just have the top 80 play each other, you know what I mean, throughout the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
And let's get rid of some of these like Mickey Mouse games where you're playing Charleston Southern, you know. Let's just have you actually win out your conference and have there be no discrepancy about it whatsoever.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon.
But I got so many plans.
You got so many. That book is writing itself week to week. John Newbery's Exotic Playoff Formations.
It's not even that exotic. It makes total sense.
Let's touch the NBA real quick here and say hey in the last 5 minutes or so. Go around the conference. The Cavs are still up on top in the East, 8-2. The Hawks are 8-4. Bulls, 6-3. Raptors have slipped a couple. They're 7-4. The 76ers are 0-10. That is unbelievable. I mean, it's at a point where it defies logic. You have the top pick in the league almost every year,
yeah.
and you still can't win in the Eastern Conference?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Well, because they get rid of some of those picks.
I mean, they get rid of them, but like...
And one of them was hurt.
It doesn't even seem like you would have to be all that successful with your drafting to just win some games
yeah.
year to year when you have that many lottery picks.
Well, the other thing too is it's like if you're tanking, what's the point of tanking? Because eventually, like the point of tanking is to get a high draft pick so you can eventually get good.
Yeah.
But it's like you said, they've had the number one pick, like, or a top three pick in the last three or four drafts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They just can't seem to get it done. And granted, you know, it's, there's no guarantee that the number one or number two guy is going to turn out, but it's like, come on.
It's amazing.
You know?
The Nets are 1-9. They almost snuck one on the Warriors the other night, who had a short bench, no Klay Thompson, no Barbosa, but Warriors wind up winning in overtime. Knicks are 5-6, which I guess is a little better than people thought they'd be 11 games through.
Porzingis looks good.
Porzingis looks pretty good. He was definitely getting dogged. Warriors are 11-0. Spurs are 7-2. Thunder is 6-4. You know, Durant's already looking injury plagued again. Hey. That's kind of his MO at this point.
Well, I think it's a little early to say that. It's only been last year and this year.
I think though, he's getting that checkered little thing going though, where he could be one of those guys. In my mind, I see this as a guy that could be kind of perennially hurt.
I hope not either.
Because
he's a special talent.
He's so great.
So great.
Yeah. And he's in a contract year, isn't he?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
This is going to be like the next biggest offseason compared to LeBron last year or whatever.
Right, right. Mavericks are 6-4.
That's kind of a nice surprise.
Yeah. Yeah, Clippers are 6-4, still looking wacky as ever.
Yeah.
Ejections.
Did you watch the Dallas Clippers game last week?
I didn't get to see it live, but I did watch the Phoenix Clippers game where Paul got hurt, Reddick got hurt,
and then Blake got ejected. Yeah.
That was classic Clippers right there.
Yeah.
Or at least these new Clippers. They're really hard to like.
I hate them.
They're really hard to like, even objectively speaking. They're just very difficult. They complain all the time.
Yeah.
Even with the depth they've added to their bench, they're still mostly guys that you don't want to root for.
I like Paul Pierce. I've always been.
Of course, you know that as well as anybody. the Suns are 5-4. They'll probably be 500-ish again. The Grizzlies have finally won a couple in a row, but I don't know, man.
They've had a tough start,
and the sun might be setting a little bit on this Grizzlies lineup.
I kind of think so.
Which doesn't mean that they're going to be horrible, but I don't see them being some top seed in the West this year.
No.
Especially with a team like Minnesota, even though they've lost four straight, they're improving.
They are.
Minnesota is definitely improving, and they're young. And yeah. I think they're coming up a bit.
I don't think that they're going to get in, because I think Dallas is probably going to get like the 6th or 7th spot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, New Orleans might be able to turn around a little bit. I think Sacramento actually has a shot. I watched that game last night against Toronto, and I'm looking at DeMarcus Cousins stepping out, hitting three-pointers, Rajon Rondo playing within himself. You know, I've always thought Rudy Gay was a solid player. You know, McLemore.
Well, if they could just cut out the dysfunction. I mean, the George Karl thing is already a circus.
Yeah, but see, I have this crazy theory that I developed in the bathroom last night.
Ah.
Okay. Of all places I develop, I'll make it quick.
You got 90 seconds.
Okay, I'll make it quick. I think that if Rondo can, because George Karl is a phenomenal basketball mind, mm-hmm. right? And Rondo's a very cerebral player. I think if Rondo can respect Karl, if they can get on the same page.
Or Cousins, for that matter.
Well, that's what I mean. I think Rondo is the linchpin here. If Rondo and Karl are on the same page, the rest of the team will fall in line.
Mm-hmm.
Because I could see Boogie and Rondo having a really good connection.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's up to Rondo. It's all about Rondo's attitude. And if he can execute Karl's game plan and respect Karl's basketball intellect, then this team could be a 500 team in the West. This could be an 8
seed. They have the talent in the starting lineup.
They do.
They're just dysfunctional. And they're going to have to figure that out.
But, Cousins had a profanity-laced tirade against the coach in the locker room.
Yeah.
But didn't they win like 2 out of 3 after that?
They've won 3 in a row.
3 in a row.
4-7.
So
the Rockets have lost 3 more in a row. And
that seems terrible.
That just breaks my
heart.
They
lost to Brooklyn.
Yeah. And the Lakers are 2-8.
Hey. And Kobe's hurt. He's not traveling.
And when he's playing, he's the least valuable player in the league with all of these shots he takes. He's shooting something like 20% from deep and like 30-something from not good for Kobe.
Yeah, no, it's over.
The Lakers are a lost cause right now, and for the Pelicans are 1-9.
That's surprising.
That is surprising.
Because, I mean, just having Anthony Davis, you just put him out there with four other guys.
And a sought-after sought-after head coach coming off a championship season with the Warriors. That might be the biggest surprise of all. The Pelicans are 1-9.
So I think really, I know it's early to call this, but man, you look at the West and it just looks like the Spurs and the Warriors collision course, Western Conference Finals.
It very well could be.
Which is what I want to see.
Yeah, it's an early season, but
the past two champs.
Yep, Steph Curry. We haven't even hardly talked about Steph, but he's turned it into.
Did you see that shot he hit the other night when he was like falling down on the ground?
Oh, yeah. No, he's really turned into something like
he's amazing.
Next level. Yeah. He's gone above what where we thought he would go.
And
he's,
there's no comparison. Like, oh, like people are saying Kobe's the next Jordan, all this. It's like Steph is really his own player, his own type of player.
He is. In fact, next week, we're out of time here. Let's talk about Steph next week.
All right.
We need to give him his due. All right. Grant's going to pod you up in the production room. Stick around. We got Peace Talks Radio on the way. Grant, you are good to go. And Noobs, pleasant as always.
Good to see you, brother.
Good to see you. And stick around. We got much more coming at you here on KZFR.
Is out on the edge of darkness. Is out on the edge of darkness. There rides the peace train. Peace.